see lying cross-checked in
agony. Padded Room Radio, it's time for another installment of our favorite sci-fi dystopian anthology series. Really, I think it's our only sci-fi dystopian anthology series. Horror, whatever. Patreon content coming at you. It's Black Mirror, Season 2, Episode 1. I guess the season premiere of Black Mirror for Season 2, which is pretty cool. Before we get into that, though, of course, we have to read last week's Patreon comments. Let's see what we got here. Started off with our main man in Tokyo, Japan. It's Kevin. Thanks for mentioning that I can pick the horror movie theme in May. I do listen to the Padded Room still, but not every episode. Too many good podcasts to listen to. I'll let you know what I think of to cover. Yeah, very cool, Kevin. Let us know, and we will take care of that for you in May, because, you know, you up your Patreon donation, and that's what you get. You get control of a month of our the theme of the movies for a month, which is pretty cool. So thank you very much for that, Kevin. I'm hoping you're enjoying this and enjoying those shows as well. Kevin coming in again. The amount of detective work and details that the husband did shows how he is a good lawyer for his firm, though his wife is unfaithful and he doesn't trust her, so their relationship isn't good. It's a good point also, Kevin. He's talking about last week's show, which was the one with the weird ricey grain chip thing. The Entire History of You, it was called. Yeah, man, that is a motherfucker, and he would have been a world-class asshole if he had turned out to be wrong. But he wasn't. He was right. She cheated on him. Quite possibly got pregnant by the other dude and passed it off as his kid, therefore she's the asshole, not him. And all that Scooby-Doo detective work turned out to be actually, you know, well met, because that is a motherfucker, and I'm kind of glad that he found her out, because who knows how much longer that would have gone on or what the hell would have happened. But you know, don't cheat on your spouse. Number one. Number two, if you're gonna do it, do a good job, and don't get caught. God damn it, that's how murders happen, right? Kevin coming in again. Rewatch the law firm's review/interview. It would have been a great twist if the husband was replaying all of these videos from a jail cell after his child sued him for insufficient parenting/negligence, which his own law firm brought against him. That would be a Twilight Zone/Outer Limits style ending. Yeah, you're right. That would. And it would be, could you go to jail for that? I mean, if you're being sued for it, you're probably going to have to cut the kid a check. God damn, man. Yeah. It's a good thing that technology isn't available, or was circa 1978, because I think I would have a pretty good case against my parents, but I don't think I would sue them for it. I would just like to bring it up periodically and show them some prime examples of what shitty parents they were. You know, Thanksgivings, Christmases, other family gatherings. Hey, Ma, remember that time you left me at the park for 4 hours while you went home and watched TV? Yeah, let's take a look at that. Let's see how that worked out for me. Right on. All right, that's it. Thanks for writing in, Kev. Hope you're still digging the show, and I look forward to hearing your picks for the month of May in the regular Padded Room podcast. Inmates, if you're not listening to the Padded Room Network, please give it a shot. It's myself and my cohorts, Monica and Buddy. We are the Padded Room Podcast. We also have Cake Wolf. Him and his coterie from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, is Cake Wolf's Happy Hour. And, of course, Tim and Benny from Australia doing Horror for Dummies. We got a whole slew of shows for you over at the Padded Room Network. It's absolutely free. Go over there, check it out, see what you think. In the meantime, we got to talk about this week's episode of Black Mirror, which we are getting into right now. It's called Be Right Back, and this is Season 2, Episode 1. This one is a motherfucker, man, and it brings to light, all these episodes bring to light some very relevant moral and ethical issues, but this one in particular, especially with technology advancing the way that it is. So we start off with a young couple, English, of course, married, look like they seem like they haven't been married for too long. You know, they're still kind of in the cutesy phase. But basically, we start off at a gas station, and we're just kind of getting to know this couple. I don't recall the names of the characters off the top of my head, and I didn't write them down because I don't think they were that relevant. But for the purposes of this podcast, we're going to call them Liam and Sarah. That those sound like proper English names, right? So Liam is he's a ginger. I believe he's Irish, or at least part Irish. And Sarah is a English woman. I don't know where she's from, but we're a little into the future. We can tell because they're at this gas station. It's a stormy, dark night, and the coffee cups that Sarah brings back to the car have like inline heaters in them, which is pretty cool. I'd be down for that. I need my coffee to cool off a little bit before I drink it. You know what I'm saying? I can't drink it too hot. Like when I get my coffee in the morning, I usually have to let it simmer for like a good 10, 15 minutes. Otherwise, I burn my face and nobody wants that. Anyway, going off on a tangent. They get in the car. Now, what we have here is apparently Liam's mother has recently passed and they've inherited her house. And by house, it's actually a pretty big, it's like a farmhouse out on the English countryside. And it's a pretty spacious, it's a little bit of a fixer-upper, but it's pretty spacious. And you got like a, what appears to be like a barn or something like that. Yeah, so it's a pretty big house. And they get in there, they're in the process of moving in. You got a bunch of boxes everywhere and all that stuff. And apparently they've rented a moving van to help them in this endeavor. So they get in, it's the first night, and we're getting a lot of cell phone time from Liam. He spends a lot of time on what I believe is a cell phone. It's some kind of a handheld device, and he's posting pictures with it. And I don't know if Snapchat is a thing in the future, or Twitter, or whatever, Instagram. I don't know, but he's posting pictures. On one occasion, he finds a picture of himself as a young boy, and he takes a picture of that picture and posts it, and that's pretty cool. And Sarah's getting pretty pissed with this because she's like talking to him, and he's like giving her the yeah, yep, whatever you say. So, you know, she's fucking with him a little bit. But she's getting a little frustrated with this. That's like me and my wife, really. She spends more time on her phone than anybody I know. Anyway, that's our first night. Our second morning rolls around, and what they have to do is return the moving van back to the rental company. And apparently Sarah is some kind of a graphics artist of some sort. And I don't know. It's futuristic. But she just picked up some kind of a contract, and they want it done by end of business that day. So I think the plan was is that they were both going to take the moving van back. But she's like, no, I got to work on this, so you're going to have to do this by yourself. And he's like, oh, yeah, great. Now, again, this motherfucker is always on his phone. All right? So yeah, I think we know where this is going, right? He gets in the van. He takes off down the dirt road under the English countryside. She starts working on her graphic design project. Now, I don't mean to nitpick this, but they went to some pretty great lengths to show that we're in the future with this graphic design notepad that she's working on. You know what I mean? It's like a futuristic kind of an iPad, but it's a whole screen. It's like the size of a microwave oven, and she's like moving things around and switching colors and things like that. Very futuristic, but if you're paying attention, you'll notice the big project that she's working on is a picture of a dog wearing a hat. Oh, who the fuck needs a picture of a dog wearing a hat? Not only do they need that picture, but they need it by close of business today. God damn it, get Sarah on the phone. I need that dog wearing a hat, and I need it now. What? The only thing I could think of is maybe it's some kind of a canned soup ad campaign. I have no idea. I don't know. It was like an artsy-fartsy avant-garde dog wearing a hat, too. I don't know. I have no idea. But we're not going to find out either, so don't get your hopes up for that. All right, so she's working on her dog wearing a hat. And, you know, the hours are ticking by, and the time is flying off the clock. Pretty soon the sun goes down. Now she's starting to get a little worried. So she calls the moving company to see if the van's been returned yet. It is not. And then she calls a few other people, like his friends and stuff. They haven't heard from him. And then she goes to bed, and then we cut to her getting woken up at 3 in the morning with a phone call. And I think we can pretty much do the math from here, right? We see a lot of her crying and a lot of her slumped over in the bathtub. And from there, we're going to cut to a funeral, because what we're getting at here, inmates, is that Liam wrecked the van. He will not be getting his security deposit back, and he will also not be breathing or walking around or being on the top of the ground. He's going to be on the bottom, underneath the dirt and stuff. He's dead, is what I'm telling you. I'm trying to break it to you gently, inmates. I don't think that worked. Anyway, he's dead. He got killed in a car accident, wrecked the van. That puts Sarah in a pretty dissociative state. We cut to her at the funeral. She's having that spousal breakdown that we see a lot. These two, I get the vibe that they were very much in love, and she is not coping with this very well. I don't know that he actually contributed much to the relationship, like financially or anything, because you know, there's no mention of him having a job or having to be anywhere. And apparently she makes pretty good money drawing dogs wearing hats. But at any rate, cut to the funeral. She's all distraught. People are tiptoeing around her. One of her friends, blonde, I believe her name was Kristen, sits down next to her, and she's like, you know, there is a way that you can continue. And she's like, what? And he's like, well, there's like this service. It's kind of hard to explain, but I went ahead and signed you up for it. And then she kind of melts down. She's like, shut up and leave me alone. Sarah keeps talking, so then she has that funeral spaz attack. I said, shut up and leave me alone! And then everybody comes, you know, running over and stuff. Okay. That's pretty effed up. I mean, I get it. It's you're grieving, and you probably don't want this chick telling you about her internet schemes, but you could just, you know, you gotta handle these situations with some decorum and grace. At least make it through the funeral. After that, you can go into a closed room and, I don't know, swallow a pillow or punch a hole in the drywall, whatever you got to do. Anyway, so now we're going to cut to her back at the house. I guess we're maybe a week or two later. She's still having a hell of a time getting over this, but she's trying to stay busy. So she's doing a lot of remodeling and painting of the house and getting settled in and stuff like that. She's painting one day, and all of a sudden, she's also doing a fair amount of drinking. I should also mention that, which I would probably be doing the same if I were in her shoes. If my wife just died in a car accident, I would be hammered probably for a good month straight. Well, no, not, I'm a terrible drinker, probably a good day or two. And then I'd be like, oh, God, my head is killing me, and I'm short a wife. I should probably figure my life out. Anyway, she's hammered. She wakes up one morning, starts to try to do some graphic design work, and then immediately starts vomiting. I think we all know what this means, don't we? Yep, she's pregnant. Woo! She's pregnant, man. We did see them have sex for a second there in the new house. They kind of christened it. So, yeah, she got pregnant, and now she's going to be a single mom, and that's a motherfucker. Now she's really having a hard time coping. She tries calling her sister, but her sister isn't home. Her sister is a pretty hot chick that lives, I don't know, maybe in a neighboring town or something. But the vibe I get there is that, and this has to be a troublesome thing for a young widow, is that you need some help. You need to talk about it and talk to people and, you know, be with your family. But at the same time, they still have lives of their own, and you don't want to, like, bog them down with your horse shit. Well, it's not horse shit. With your grieving process, I guess I should say. I'm known for my sensitivity. Yeah, that grieving horse shit. Anyway. She's wanting to talk to her, but then she's like, oh, I don't want to tell her I'm pregnant. That's going to be a whole fiasco. So she's really starting to break down, and she gets on her laptop one night as she's going to bed, and she sees an email from Kristen, and she's like, hey, I signed you up for that service. And she's like, oh, delete. But then up at the top of that email list is one from Liam, and it says, hey, it's me. And she's like, oh my God, what the hell? So she opens it. And basically, it's like a chat box that pops up, and she basically starts having a full-on, like, instant messenger chat with Liam. And she's like, what the fuck is this? I miss you so much and all that stuff. After a couple of minutes, she gets Kristen on the phone, and she's like, hey, what the fuck is this? And Kristen explains that basically what it was that she signed Sarah up for was a in-memoriam service that basically compiles all of Liam's old Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, and any other social media posts that he made into a profile, psychological and otherwise profile, and it basically downloads it to a hard drive, which then interacts with you in an artificial intelligence sort of a way. So you can now say all the things that you want to say, and that's that. So basically, she continues with this chat conversation. She tells it that she's pregnant, and it's like, wow, I'm going to be a dad. And she's like, right? Yeah, I mean, it's not really you, but Liam is going to be a dad. And he's like, no, it's me. It's totally me. So from there, she pays for the upgrade, which makes it accessible to her mobile device, which means that she can now take Liam with her wherever she wants to go. And he can actually see things whenever she turns the camera on. So that's kind of cool, right? A little creepy, though, because now she's like going on nature hikes and hiking up cliffs and stuff and having conversations. There's a voice activation mod, so they can have like phone conversations that sounds just like him, apparently. And they're on one of these nature hikes. They stop for a picnic, and he's like, there is another upgrade you can get. It's pretty pricey, but if you want, I could be there with you, like, in person. And she's like, what the fuck are you talking about, dude? And he's like, well, we don't see how the process goes down, but it's like, check out the website. It'll run you through the details. Cut to maybe a week or two later, this big box shows up at her door. It kind of looks like a coffin, but it's like styrofoam. And she opens it up, and this box looks like something that was sent from, like, a Medellin drug cartel. She opens it up, and it's like all these freeze-dried body parts to include a head, legs, arm, and torso. And apparently this thing has been, like, customized to look just like Liam. And she puts it in the bathtub, and then she has to sprinkle this electrolyte powder on it, and then she has to let it simmer for a while. And then a couple hours later, out walks Liam, and he's naked. He's got a towel on, and it's him. He's apparently been downloaded to this flesh bot, and now it's basically him, man. All the memories, all the mannerisms. There are certain imperfections that are missing, but as she brings them up to him/it, it corrects it. So she's like, well, Liam used to have a mole right here by his collarbone, and he's like, oh, okay. And he goes, boop, and a little mole pops up. So that's kind of creepy. Naturally, they have sex, which is even creepier now that I think about it. It's a weird... I don't know what she paid for this thing, but I imagine it's a pretty penny. So if I'm spending that kind of payola on it, believe me, I'm going to find a way to fuck it. And if it's going to be a facsimile of my wife, I'm going to make a few modifications. I really hope she didn't hear me say that, but we're gonna adjust some measurements, if you know what I'm saying. Anyway, they have sex. It's weird. They're basically going on about their life, and it's almost as though he never died. But there are certain things that just kind of throw her off. For example, they get in the car and the Bee Gees are playing. Liam loved the Bee Gees. Dead Liam doesn't. He thinks they're kind of cheesy. That's kind of off-putting. At one point, they have an argument, and she's basically kicking him out of the house. And we find out that Dead Liam cannot go more than 25 meters away from his point of origin, which would be the bathtub, unless he's accommodated by his administrator, which would be Sarah. So that's kind of creepy, too. So basically, she kicks him out. He walks to the edge of the 25-meter radius, which is like the just outside the front yard, and he stands there all night motionless, which is completely creepy. And then she's like, "Hey, what are you doing? Come, all right, come on back in, Jesus." So this whole thing is—it's good for Sarah, but at the same time, she's starting to really get creeped out by it. So one night, I think they reach the breaking point where they're trying to go to bed, and they're laying in bed together. And Liam doesn't really need to go to sleep, and dead Liam doesn't breathe, and this is freaking Sarah out. She's like, "Hey, if you're going to pretend to go to sleep, could you at least pretend to breathe also? Because you just laying there is kind of weird." And he's like, "Okay, nope, sorry. Yeah, I'll do that." When he starts pretending to breathe really heavy, and she's like, "What are you doing?" So this leads to a big fight. Cut to the next morning. They go for a nature hike, and she basically takes him to the cliffs that her and Liam used to go to, Lover's Leap, I think it's called. And she asks him to jump off. And he's like, "Okay, if that's what you want me to do." And she's like, "No, that's not what I want you to do. If you were really Liam, you would be like crying and begging and fighting against me and not wanting to kill yourself." And he's like, "Oh, is that what you want me to do?" And she's like, "Yeah, but no, I just want you to jump off." So then he starts crying and begging. And she's like, "Wait, now, all right, now just hold on there. This is not fair. Now you're going to make me feel bad about this." And he's like, "Well, you told me to cry and beg." And she's like, "Yeah, but now I don't know. So that it kind of goes back and forth till it reaches like a culmination. And then we're going to cut to, like, I assume like 7 or 8 years into the future. She has now had the baby. It's a girl. She's like 7 or 8 years old, and they're coming back. It's the girl's birthday party. They just pull up to the house, and they go inside, and they've got a cake and presents and everything. And the girl's like, "Hey, thanks for the cake and the presents. I'm going to go up to the attic for a little while." And Sarah's like, "Yeah, all right, but just for a little while." So she takes a slice of cake up to the attic, and we find out that's where dead Liam is now. Apparently, he just hangs in the attic until somebody comes up and talks to him or does something. I don't know. It's very strange. It's almost like sex bot-ish in a weird way, but with more of an emotional attachment, because I think that's the appeal of the sex bot, right? You turn it on, you bang it, you turn it off, you go back to playing Dead by Daylight, and then you only have to buy dinner for one later on, I guess. I don't know. It's very strange, man, but it brings to light some moral dilemmas here. Number one, do you think obviously she wanted closure, I get that, but do you think that having her dead husband hang around in this bizarro AI fleshbot body, do you think that made it even harder for her to let go? You would think so, because you're drawing out the inevitable, right? And you would think that the weird fleshbot thing would only last so long before it just collapses or biodegrades or whatever the fuck happens to those things. I have no idea. But I would, you know, beg the issue that this type of a service would actually do more harm than good. Because, like, it's one thing to hold on to the memory of somebody. It's another thing to obsess over it and talk to it and, you know, have this weird biochemical, mechanical amalgamation hanging around that isn't really them, but it's close enough to them to suit your needs. Now, I get it in this case because he was taken at a fairly young age and, he left a lot of unfinished business, so to speak. But like my grandmother, I don't think I'd want that. I mean, I love my grandmother dearly, but really what I don't know what I would do if my grandmother were still alive. Maybe it's just me. I'm not that close to my family, though, so that probably has something to do with it. Or even my father, for that matter. He died in 2009. But, I just think it's probably better just to move on, because you can't really start the healing process, or the grieving process, even for that matter, if you're still holding on to these digital platforms and this weird artificial intelligence fucking situation, whatever you want to call it. So that's pretty much your episode there. That's Be Right Back from Black Mirror Season 2, Episode 1. I gotta say, though, we're probably not that far away from being able to do that, which brings to light some very strange issues that we're going to have in the not-too-distant future, as far as, like, what would Liam have human rights? You know, think about that. He's not really human. So if he wanted to somehow go out and get a job, you know, and he doesn't need to eat or sleep, if I was like a small business owner, I would just like get like 6 or 8 of these things, stay open 24 hours and not have to pay anybody. You know, you put them in the closet when they're not working and then you rotate them out and then you're pretty much good to go. But so would they have rights? I don't know, because they're not really human. But at the same time, they have the personalities and the quote-unquote souls of humans. So, like, if somebody were to resurrect my grandmother and put her in one of these weird fleshbot things and put her to work, I would want somebody to... I don't know, man, because it's not really her, though, right? It's just a downloaded simulation of her in a weird... biomechanical flesh suit. So we could go back and forth with this all day, or I could by myself like a lunatic. Anyway, thank you for joining me, inmates. That was I'll be right back from Black Mirror. Think about that. Let me know what you think. I'm curious to know your thoughts on the bringing back of the dead in this weird digital platform dystopian era that we're probably headed into. Let me know what you think of that. I'm very curious to hear your opinions. Leave me some Patreon comments. Join me again next week for Black Mirror Season 2, Episode 2. I have no idea which one it is, but we'll figure it out. And go from there. Thank you again for joining me.
Try to shame me, and still I'll care for you. You can run around, even put me down.